So sweet, so powerful to see that young child created ultimately by the power of God, and the joy that brings to families and parents. And I think it's compelling to me, at least as I introduced this series last week, that goes into the lives of Ruth and Naomi, that part of the struggle that they had, part of the grief that they experienced or disappointment in their lives was connected to the fact that at least Ruth and her sister went 10 years without having a child. And back in that day especially, I know a lot of people struggle with that today. And it's a difficult situation to be in. And parents, couples, they want to have children and sometimes they can't. And I've known folks who have really struggled with that. But back in this day, especially, to not have children, it was not only something that you wanted to do and just love them like kids, but it was an insurance policy for security. It was an insurance policy for safety. And especially for somebody in the circumstance of Naomi and Ruth. Naomi was disappointed. We discussed last week how down she was, how discouraged she was about life. And one of the points I made last week is that faithfulness is honest. And she was honest. It wasn't that she wasn't faithful to God. She couldn't see God anywhere. She couldn't see His work. In fact, she believed that God was causing her to go through this grief with her sons dying and now there not being any child in her family to help and encourage and support her. And so she makes that decision to go back to Bethlehem. And it was a hard decision. And she encouraged her daughters-in-law to stay there in Moab. But it was Ruth who made that promise to her. And I closed last week by making this point. That is, faithfulness is always shown by doing the right thing because of loyalty and love. Faithfulness is doing the right thing, even when we maybe can't see God clearly in the picture. And it's doing it because of loyalty and love. And that's what we get in the passage with this promise that Ruth made to Naomi. She had every reason to stay. She had so many reasons not to go with her mother-in-law. And yet, she was committed to her in a way that she said, "May God bring a curse down on me. May God bring a curse into my life if I don't keep this promise to you. I am going to go with you and I'm going to stand by your side and I'm going to stay and your people will be my people and your God will be my God and may God keep me to this promise." What a promise it was. And there's something that she says as she speaks to her daughters-in-law that introduces a word that's going to be the focus of my lesson today. And this is a word that's introduced in verse 8 of Ruth chapter 1. "Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me.'" May the Lord show kindness to you. Right there. And I have right here on the screen the power of Hesed. And you say, what in the world is Hesed? That's this word translated, kindness. It's a word in the Old Testament that is one of those, like if you were going to pick a top 10 Hebrew words of the Old Testament, this word would be one of those words. But a difficult thing about this word that it's hard to translate. It's one of those words that's packed with so much meaning that to translate it one thing leaves out something else. So you'll see all kinds of translations for this word Hesed in the Old Testament. Sometimes it's love, sometimes it's loving kindness, sometimes it's mercy, sometimes it's loving mercy. It's a word that is so hard to describe. But I thought about this as I was putting this series and this lesson together, that is there a concept in the New Testament and the teaching of Jesus that really captures what's carried up and called out in this word hesed? As Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, this is what I want for you. I want God's hesed for you, and because of that, I want you to stay, because I think that's going to be better for you. Ruth, out of her love for her daughters-in-law, says, even though it would have been in her best interest for somebody to go with her, she says stay, because she wants to put them first. And I think of Jesus and his teaching in the Sermon on the Mount as he challenges us to a lifestyle and a way of living that is so contrary to what we see a lot of times in this world. And Jesus talks about personal revenge, and he talks about forgiveness. And he talks about what we call here going the extra mile in Matthew 5:41. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. This extra mile kind of behavior, this is what hesed is all about. It's about putting the other person first. It's about sacrifice. It's about commitment. It's about doing something for someone else, even though they may not necessarily deserve it. As a matter of fact, it's a lot like our word in the Greek in the New Testament, agape. That's a tough word to translate too, because agape says a lot. We sang the song this morning. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. Steadfast love. That's a translation of this word, hesed. And when those words were spoken by the prophet Jeremiah in the book of Lamentations, they were struggling, they were hurting. They were suffering consequences, just like Naomi was feeling in her life, and couldn't really see God clearly. Couldn't even see God on her blind side. And I appreciate, as I mentioned last week, Naomi's honesty before God. As I said, you can't be faithful without being honest, because God already knows. And being honest is a step toward moving in a direction that will help us get to where God wants us to be. But God wants us to understand, first of all, that He is committed to us. And that Naomi, while she may have been struggling with the question, you know, where is God in this? Is God faithful? Does God keep His promises? God says yes. And in the midst of a nation, as Jeremiah preached, that was struggling and was under captivity and suffering consequences for sin, he says this, in the midst of all that, God's steadfast love never ceases. It's there. God goes the extra mile for us. God goes above and beyond what we deserve, even though we may not always feel it. That kind of commitment, it is so contrary in a lot of ways to just culture in general. I mean, culture is, in a lot of ways, it's about me. I mean, you think of a word that has been coined over the last 20 years. I mean, 20 years ago, did the word selfie even exist? Selfie? Could you find it in the dictionary? It wasn't there. In fact, I've wondered, I don't take very many selfies. I'm going to take a selfie of myself right now. There you go. I just took a selfie right here while I preached. Selfie. It's all about selfie. It's all about self. How many of you have taken a selfie? Come on, be honest. Raise your hand really high. How many of you have taken a lot of selfies of yourself? Huh? Your photo library maybe is full of them. But to me, whether you've done that or not, and you can take a selfie, that's no big deal. It's an illustration of something deeper and more profound. It's an illustration and a challenge to us to go beyond what might be expected or what might be the bare minimum in terms of our relationship with other people or what we do for others. I have songs that I listen to on my own playlist, but occasionally, as I told you before, I just listen to random playlists. And so about a month ago, I was struck by the words of this song by someone I had never heard of. Her name is Ivory Lane. And it's a sweet little song with a sweet little tune. But the words to the song, and I'm not going to read all of them, go like this. I'm certainly not going to sing it. It says, I'm losing focus. I'm losing sleep. Because the only thing that matters is me. I'm feeling hopeless and out of sync because the only thing that matters is me. In my solar system, I'm the sun. I don't see the need in anyone. I am my best friend and enemy because the only thing that matters is me. I'm super selfish. I steal the scene because the only thing that matters is me. I bow and worship my thoughts and dreams because the only thing that matters is me. But then she says something in this song that strikes me. I'm the danger crying help. I'm a hazard to my health. Yeah, I'm strung out on myself. I'm strung out on myself. I see what Ruth does. I see the commitment that she makes. I see what she does in terms of her actions when she goes out to glean in a field once they return to Bethlehem. And let me read it for you real quickly here. It says, now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I have found favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out. She began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. And as it turns out, and I put that in quotes, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem, greeted the harvesters, the Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. And Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, whose young woman is that? Whose young woman is that? The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. Hesed love, extra mile love, extra mile commitment, extra mile loyalty goes above and beyond what might be expected. And when it's lived out, it's noticed. People notice. They noticed with Ruth here and how she's living and what she's doing. And as far as she's concerned, all she wants to do is take care of her mother-in-law and make sure her needs are met. And so she goes out to this field and gleans. And once there's some exchange between them, you'll see in this next scripture. This next slide, go ahead and pull that up. Oh, yeah, that's not the one I thought it was going to be, but that's okay. And when you're doing this live, everybody's there to see it. The fact is that what happens here is Boaz has been told about everything that Ruth has been doing, and he finds out there in the field, he's curious who she is. He doesn't know. And so he is told by the foreman that this is who Ruth is. This is what she's done. Word has gotten around. And it's happened because she's taken a risk in what she's doing. You think about how difficult it would be for a woman, an unmarried widow, who is in this situation in this day. And if you have time to read this entire chapter, I hope you take a look at the number of times the comment is made about things that are done to keep people safe. And what Boaz says to people about looking after Ruth and looking after her needs and making sure that she's not harmed. Faithful love doesn't always play it safe. And in the life of Ruth, it's clearly seen. She takes the initiative. She's the one who's willing to go out in a dangerous situation. There would have been dangers there from other people, possibly. There are dangers in going to this place that she was not familiar with, and yet she was willing to do it. And it was a tough thing to do. It was hard to do for poor people in this situation. It was hard enough when you went gleaning in a field. You pretty much told everybody that you were poor. It was a public display of poverty. And gleaning back in this day, the gleaning laws that existed were for the protection and to provide for those people who were the neediest and the most vulnerable of the people who lived back in this day. So the gleaning law said, when you harvest your fields, don't harvest the very edges of the fields or the corners of the fields, so those who are poor or aliens or widows or others who have needs, they can follow behind and gather there. But that brings to mind this question: what role does Boaz play in all of this, and why does he react the way he does? What's the payoff? You think of what a landowner back in this day may have done, and it was up to them to decide how much of that field they would leave. That wasn't specified in the law. So as a landowner, as someone who had crops that were harvested, and this was during the harvesting time, I mean, you could be as stingy as you wanted to be. You had to leave some of that as the people went through and they gleaned in the fields and they cut the sheaves of wheat or the barley or whatever it was. The female workers would usually follow behind the servants, and then they would take that grain and put it into bundles. And the gleaning law says, look, when you do that, don't pick up every little sheath that may fall to the ground. You just keep on harvesting so those who are poor can be provided for. But back in this day, it was a hand-to-mouth existence. It wasn't like you would go out gleaning in a field. There was a chance that you might not be able to glean enough to have enough for a day or two. It was a hard, difficult existence. But Ruth is willing to do it because she cares for Naomi and she wants to make sure she's provided for. It's amazing when you think about it. You think about how Naomi must have felt. I mean, before they left to go to Moab because of the famine, go to Moab as hunger refugees, members of high standing in the community, respected. And she comes back poor. I mean, dirt poor. There's land. We'll talk about that in a later lesson. But I mean, what is she going to do? She's pretty despondent. But Ruth is the one who takes the risk. Ruth is the one who takes the chance. Ruth is the one who does what's not necessarily easy. But I tell you right now, if you've read this chapter this week, you know there's a payoff. There's a payoff for her. In fact, Boaz talks about it when he speaks to her later, and that's the next screen, I'm pretty sure. No, that was the one. No, go back to that one. Yeah. Notice what Boaz says to her. He says to her, "May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." So he's seen the Hesed love in Ruth. He has seen what she has done. He has heard about her commitment and her loyalty and her extra mile above and beyond love for her mother-in-law. And he says, "I pray to God, may God reward you for that commitment and doing something beyond what might be expected of you, for showing commitment and loyalty that is beyond what this world may understand, beyond those who only live for themselves or think about themselves." She's thinking sacrificially. And I tell you what, he answers this prayer that he speaks in In verse, follow along with me in verse 14. I want you to see what Boaz does. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here. Have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." And when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered to her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. And as she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her." He's already told them, "You don't hurt her or harm her. Rather, put out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening, when she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to an ephah. Now, there's some discussion among some scholars as to exactly what amount this might be. But an ephah is probably about 27 to 29 pounds. I want you to stop there for a second and think about what he does and about where she is. I mean, she's vulnerable, but I tell you, she is bold. She is bold in making the request, and some scholars believe the request that she made is above and beyond perhaps what some gleaners might request. I don't know about that, but the fact is she asked and she worked and was vulnerable. That speaks a lot about her. But it also speaks to this amazing generosity that Boaz shows to her. And I don't believe for a second that he has his eye on her. At this point, I don't think he has romantic or marriage intentions. That's the farthest thing from his mind. All he knows is that here is a woman who has done something amazing. And I'm going to do something. I'm going to do something above and beyond what would be expected to do for her. So he lets her eat lunch with them. He makes sure she drinks water from an area that would be more protected. He tells her to stay with his servant girls as they do their work. He even invites her to sit down and eat lunch with them and gives her enough for lunch on that day so that she had leftovers. He guaranteed her success. I'm not saying that she would have gone home with nothing. She would have gone home with enough for them to eat that day, perhaps, or maybe the next day. I don't know. But he ensured that she and her mother-in-law would receive way beyond what might be expected, but maybe a half a month's wages for the average laborer. 29 pounds of grain. Is there a payoff? Yeah, there's a payoff. But we don't always see it immediately. Certainly, as Naomi and Ruth are struggling the way they did, as we look at what's happened in their life so far, they're not always seeing the payoff. They're not always necessarily seeing God in their blind side. Naomi is still despondent. She is still struggling. She still considers herself Mara, bitter. Life's been hard. But she never abandons faith. Never abandons faith. In fact, Boaz goes so far with his workers that he tells them, as she follows you, I want you to pull out some stalks from those sheaves and just leave them there so she can pick them up. Above and beyond what might be expected. Talk about extra mile hesed for somebody else. But how does this look to you? And how does this look to me? In practical terms, how do we express hesed love, extra mile, above and beyond action in our lives that demonstrates this to others? Well, we do it in our relationships. I know of marriage situations in the past with people I know who had unfaithfulness within their marriage bond and marriage relationship. And I guess if you look at it from a scriptural, biblical standpoint, Jesus talks about unfaithfulness as a valid reason to get a divorce. And sometimes that's necessary and it happens. But I also know of situations where there's been terrible things done in relationships. Terrible hurt in relationships. But because one or both parties in that relationship was committed to making it work through thick and thin, no matter what, something amazing was accomplished. In fact, sometimes it's just hard to forgive. Jesus says if someone compels you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles. The Roman soldier who could tell a Jewish individual to take my backpack and take my supplies, and they were forced by law to go 1 mile, and sometimes that was very heavy. You don't think they resented that? So Jesus says, look, if you're in a situation, you carry it 1 mile and you go above and beyond what they ask you. You never know how that might influence somebody. I think of the commitment we have to our children, and I think of the expectations we have for our kids. And they ought to be there. We ought to hold up high expectations for our children, and we ought to encourage them and work with them in a way that holds them accountable in growing and developing and being the people that they need to be. But at the same time, so when we're disappointed or they don't meet our expectations or let us down or make terrible mistakes, those kids, they've got to always know whatever you've done, however you've blown it, whatever misery this action or this attitude or whatever it is may have caused in the family, I want you to know that I am committed to you as your parent through thick and thin. That doesn't mean they don't suffer consequences. That doesn't mean that sometimes we ought to display tough love. Sometimes we should. But they know we're committed, no matter what. I think it's just things we do around here. What's our attitude about our involvement with our church family, the things we do? I mean, yesterday we had a work day, and we came together, and we did some work, and we tidied up this place, and mulch was put down, and different things were done. And I had a conversation with one of the young ladies who was here, and she just made the comment. She said, you know, Saturdays are usually reserved for me for, you know, that's my day that I get my things done. I get rest. You know, my week's real busy. But she said, you know, I thought, you know, I need to do this. Felt convicted to do that. But I don't want any of us to feel convicted to do anything just because, and she certainly didn't have this attitude, just because, you know, the church has activities, and we want to be more religious, and we want to sign up for those activities. I mean, the people who came here yesterday and worked in Workday, we were doing it. They were doing it because they want this place to look better when members or guests come, and we want to reach more people for Jesus. And when somebody comes here, they're affected by what they see. It's about other people. I think of our attitude sometimes when maybe we're signing up or want to do something and we don't want to think first, what's in it for me? We want to think, what can I do for the other person? And I think a lot of people are doing that. Not just how can it help me, how can it benefit me, but how can it bless and help somebody else? We have food and fellowship groups starting in June. We have sign-ups for that. And I certainly encourage you, as you sign up for those food and fellowship groups, don't just be thinking about, you know, how is this going to benefit me or how can it benefit me? But I want you to think about how you can bless somebody else in that relationship. Going the extra mile in the things that we do, in the way we spend our money. I know of people who might be struggling whether to support a child in Hope for Haiti's Children. And maybe you're thinking, I don't know if I can afford that. Now, there are plenty of people that can give out of their abundance and probably do a lot of things, but the challenge comes in going above and beyond when there's a cost or a sacrifice involved. can, what benefit is there for me or you when we go to City Gospel Mission and we feed those people and sit down at the tables with those people who are homeless and trying to get back on their feet? What can they do for me? Well, they can't do much for us, except there is a sense that when we're involved in anything that involves time or sacrifice, there's a satisfaction in knowing that doing that, I am reflecting the image of God as one who is committed to me, to us, in a hesed kind of way, no matter what. And then we reflect that in the things we do for others. And it's not always easy. Sometimes it's hard. You teenagers, you know what it's like at school sometimes. I remember what it was like. I don't know if it's changed that much, but there are always people who are the people who are unpopular or the outcast or those that people don't want to have much to do with. And it's especially, at least when I was growing up, it was highlighted in the lunchroom. And then at this table over here, you had the jocks and the athletes that would sit together, and maybe they would sit with the cheerleaders, and maybe over in this group, here's the band people, and they all kind of hung together, and then this group or that group. You remember the ones that were just, they just never kind of fit in anywhere. It's easy to take a seat and be with people you're comfortable with. It is. It's hard when God challenges you to stretch your comfort zone, and maybe even in that situation in the lunchroom, you get up, you go sit with that person who's sitting by themselves, and they look lonely. That's risky, though, right? What are people going to think? Are they going to criticize me for doing that? I think about Ruth. She just did what she did because of a committed, loving loyalty to Naomi. There's risks, there's danger that could be there, but she chose not to play it safe. There are so many ways. Some of them don't involve as much risk as others. Some of them might involve a financial commitment. Others might involve some other kind of stretching ourselves beyond our comfort zone. But when we do that, we can be sure, and we do it in the name of God to glorify Him and not ourselves, that we will be rewarded and we will bless others as we do that. Ruth comes home with 29 pounds of grain. And you can imagine, this just absolutely blows Naomi's mind. She is dumbfounded at what happens. What happened? How did this happen? Where? What field did you work at? Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed is the man who took notice of you. And listen, I already mentioned this last week. Culturally, in that day and time, there is no way somebody like Ruth is going to be able to bring home that much grain in the context and culture of that day without someone having that kind of influence. And Naomi recognizes it. Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she'd been working. The name of the man I work with today is Boaz, she said. And then in verse 20, it says, "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." And then she added, "This man is one of our close relatives. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Three times in the book of Ruth, this word occurs. Hesed. Hesed. Same word in the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. Three times. It's a key word in Ruth, but it just occurs three times. The second time it occurs is when Ruth comes home with what she has and Naomi is revived. She sees things differently. Hope is regained in her life. And while she may have not been seeing God's hesed, God's love, God's commitment in her front side or her blind side. It was there all the time. But it took what Ruth did, and then it took what Boaz did and his commitment and his hesed loyalty and love to bring Naomi back to a point now, and we'll see this in 2 weeks, that she feels invigorated now to go to bat for her daughter-in-law. And she will. Whatever the time, whatever the effort, whatever the commitment, whatever it is you do, whether it's in relationships or the way you use your money or how you may support a mission work. Today is Mission Sunday. A lot of that money goes to people who are destitute and in need. Whatever that commitment may be, you can know, given with the right motives, it's going to bless somebody, and it may revive their hope in God. Think about it this way. You are an agent of God's hesed, God's loving loyalty. Where is God calling you? God uses you to revive hope, and God, even though sometimes we don't see it, sometimes we struggle, You may be where I was talking about Naomi last. You may be right where Naomi was last week. You may be hanging on by a thread. You don't see where God's fitting in this picture. You may not see where God's working in this story, but He is. He is. Ruth and Naomi endured many, many years of difficulty. But God's steadfast love never ceases. Be that hesed to someone else. And God may be calling you right now to a commitment, like Ruth made that commitment to Naomi. He may be calling you to a commitment right now, this minute. And we want you to let us know. If you're ready to make a commitment to Jesus and be baptized, let us know. We're ready to do it anytime you want to do that. In the meantime, let's not forget the reason we can have hope is because of Jesus and because of what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. Because He is the ultimate expression of God's committed extra mile above and beyond love. And He calls us to follow that. Let us know. Let us know. You may meet us after we end the service. There's a guest welcome area right over here outside these doors to the right. Someone will be here to talk with you. If you have some questions, give thanks to God for